Tansay, hello and welcome. You're listening to the Voices of Our People on the Wind Speaker Radio Network. I'm Daniel Barker Trombley and it's Seagatsoon. And on today's show, I'm honored to speak with Sterling John from Edmonton, Alberta. Sterling, go ahead and introduce yourself, brother.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Sterling John, and it's a rainy day out there today, so it's great to be in here talking to you. And yeah, I'm sure we have lots to talk about.
Oh, we have lots to talk about. And for those that may not know, Sterling John is a well-renowned country artist that travels all across Alberta and many places, including a lot that I'm going to mention in the show today. And of course, talking about his foundation and everything, we got lots of good stuff to talk about. The first thing I got to ask, though, is Sterling, is, you know, can you talk about the roots that, you know, trace back to the Saujon Cree First Nation Reserve in Ontario, or the Saigon First Nation Reserve in Ontario?
Yeah, so I was raised in Ontario. My family is residing in the Saugeen First Nation, number 29. It's a Ojibwe reserve just north of Toronto. Really nice area, right along the Huron Lakes. And yeah, it's that's where my roots were from. So ended up living in Ontario until I was 18 years of age, and then ended up moving to the Prairie Provinces ever since. So it's been a good time in Alberta.
And of course, I have to ask, because I've heard a lot of your country songs, what got you into, and what inspired you, or who inspired you to get into country, the genre, and performing as well as an artist?
Yeah, so I was raised on gospel music, actually. And as I grew up, I ended up working on a farm. And it was a chicken farm near Barrie, Ontario. One of the scariest jobs I've ever had. But the one thing that they did there was they always listened to country music. So Alan Jackson and Keith Urban and... so that's really what where my love for country music really started. So, yeah.
Wow. And of course, you know, from Ontario, who would you say some of your role models were that helped shape you into the person that you are today?
So Robert Armstrong was an aircraft pilot, and he was certainly a mentor for me as a young person growing up. Really fostered that passion of aviation in me. Music, we performed around Ontario as a family, and yeah, so it just never really left me.
And of course, with your roots as well, did you ever like attend powwows or round dances and stuff like that in Ontario when you were growing up?
You know, I really didn't. It was the last 17 years of my life in the Prairie Provinces that I really revisited my culture and learned a lot about it here, and it was really good to do. You know, I knew some things, but it just wasn't really something that was really taught to me too much as a young person. So yeah.
And of course, with that, you know, with you being here in the Prairies, you also took on the journey of going into the role of becoming a Royal Canadian Mounted Police officer. What inspired you to get into that role to become one of the men and women in blue?
So as a young person, I always loved the idea of being a first responder, you know, going to calls, driving fast and that sort of thing. But the one thing that really appealed to me was a job where you could get out there and help people. I see that more and more now, and I'm so thankful for the reasons why I applied at such a young age, because there's been many opportunities where you're heading to calls where you're able to affect people's lives in a very positive way. Not only that, but also our youth. And, you know, when you're driving down the road, you know, there's lots of people out there that will pull over and help you with a flat tire and help others. And that's something I always loved doing. Something my family always loved to do is help others. But policing has been one of those things where on a bigger scale, where you've been able to go into situations and really... make a mark in people's lives to guide them and mentor them as well, especially our youth. So that's something I've really enjoyed about the job.
And of course, you know, as a country artist, you know, and like many others, they always look for inspiration with stuff that's happened within their own lives. And you, as being an RCMP officer, one of the songs that you've written was called Weight of a Call. Can you talk a little bit about that song and what inspired that song to come about?
Yeah, so, you know, it was talked about before, you know, there was kind of a tough time in my life, even as a police officer, between 2013 and 2016. It was the totality of circumstances that was going on in my personal life, but also in work life. There was a lot of high-risk traumatic calls that I was involved in. Weight of the Call was was started from a call that happened west of Stony Plain. And regardless of how fast we went to get there, we just couldn't get there fast enough, right? We couldn't change the outcome of that situation, which was really hard. And the song spoke about, I was driving as fast as I could, just trying to get through. It was out of my control, the circumstances that day. If I could go back, I'd be okay. It speaks to what the first responders deal with going to these traumatic calls, not just police, but the paramedics that were on scene that day. They were amazing. I've seen paramedics in the ambulance working on this person, just doing everything that they had to do within their training, super strong, to see when Stars Air Ambulance landed and then took the patient into Edmonton, to see them break down after the helicopter lifted off, to see the adrenaline leave them, right? And the reality of that call and what it meant. And to see the paramedics break down was also a big part of that song, because it shows the human side of us. It shows the police officers that were there that day, when they left that call, they carried on to the next call, right? I know many other calls that they went to that were super traumatic, just like that one. And those police officers that were there with me that day are friends of mine. And I know their story. And I know the path that they've had to go through since these calls in their own personal walk with mental health. So it's a very deep song. It talks about the sacrifices that first responders make in general to our community, and the weight that they carry with them after they go home, because they never really leave work. The work always comes home with them. It's always on their mind. It's just how we cope with that and support each other.
And when that song came out, and a lot of your colleagues, whether that be your partners that you work with every single day and you share a cruiser with, or you're in the same precinct, when that song released, what was the reception that you got from first responders and also fellow police officers that work alongside you?
Yeah, it really spoke a truth, and it really resonated with many first responders that, you know, couldn't necessarily put into words how they felt and what, you know, they don't talk about that with a lot of people. They hold it inside, and a lot of them don't want to. They want to it went really viral in Texas, actually, in the States, and it just kind of became a song that spoke a truth for what first responders couldn't really talk about in the public or in the media. And
And of course, you know, with a lot of your songs, like for me, when I went through a recent breakup, this is going to sound like a country song, ladies and gentlemen, but when you came out with Record Time, that song, like, I was just on the tail end of my breakup. I just got out of a toxic relationship, and I was like, man, like, what is it like? Is it like about country music that just speaks to the soul every single time, especially with Record Time? You know, I could put on a good country tune and just forget about it right then and there. But I have to ask as well, your songs have that inspirational essence to them. Is that what you were aiming for when you became a country artist, to say, like, I want my music, when somebody turns on a song that I play, whether they're going through hardships or heartache, or whether they're going through their biggest wins or their biggest lows, they can listen to my songs and say, wow, like, this is going to be the inspiration to my day to day.
Totally. You know what? I think about this more now. Why do we do the music? Why do we put this music out there? Is it to make a difference in this world, or is it to get noticed, right? And the reality is, I'm noticing that as life goes on, social media, all these things, it's becoming more cringy, right? That's just my personal view of it. And that's not where I want to be, right? I want to be doing music that is going to make a difference, that is going to help somebody through a time in their life. Because really, honestly, I look back and I'm like, you know, I went through a journey in my life, and I still am. You know, it's never over. I mean, we're always learning new things. But even I look at my music journey and some of the music that I was releasing at the very beginning of that, it really became a diary of where I was at in my life, to where I am now. And like the song Try Again is honestly one of my favorite songs that I released. My friend Dave Peterson wrote it. That's really where I want to be with my music, because there's many people that are out there going through a tough time that are just looking to find some level of hope. And there's been times, even as a police officer, where I go into these situations and this person that is going through a really tough time has broken down, doesn't know, can't see light at the end of the tunnel. And all the lyrics to these songs come back to me. And we have to make a determination. Does this person need to seek additional professional help? Mm-hmm. Do they need to go to the hospital and speak to a professional to get them that help? Do they need somebody to talk to that will help them through that situation in that day? Do they need a counselor, right? Because a lot of times as a first responder, you're a counselor, you're everything to them at that time. And there's times where, you know, we'll actually just listen to the song Try Again. And to see the people that are hurting within our communities, you're going through that song and you can just see them breaking down through the lyrics in those songs. That is why I do music, because you're there in that specific place and time for that person for a reason, because you never know in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years where that person's going to be and how they're going to help somebody else. So I love it.
And that, and honestly, like, you know, like it, music is so powerful in that, where it just helps to bring a message across and it hits you in a way that no one on this earth can even sum up or begin to summarize in a sense. And for me personally, like, I've had my fair share of when I first discovered Try Again. And, you know, I remember I was going through some stuff, you know, whether it was stress for work or stress of outside life or whatever else. And I was like, man, like, you know, the higher power is testing me today. And of course, just putting that song on, it's just like, yeah, okay, I can dust myself off, I can pick myself up and continue to push forward as well. And of course, you know, with you and how embracing that you are within your music also, but you've also are well known with embracing the opportunities that you're given to work with many First Nations communities across Canada with a passion to inspire Indigenous youth. Do you have any memories in your travels and interactions with the youth that have stuck with you ever since you've been doing that across Alberta and other provinces as well?
Totally. When we worked up north, you know, we would take pop and chips out to John Doe Prairie and do youth night out there in the at the school gym. And one thing I take from these things is these are opportunities where you can influence positive change in these kids' lives. When maybe they're going through bullying issues at school, or, you know, a guardian that doesn't necessarily take the time to listen to them, right? And because kids need that, youth need that, and they need to know that they're heard. So I've combined my parenting as a father to policing, and sometimes you're that listening ear for them. So it's all about building relationships within community. That's what we did up in Little Red River Cree Nation, and that's what I'm doing down here now too in the Enoch area and across Canada too. So we do things into Ontario, going into Saugeen First Nation area, Port Elgin, Owen Sound. And, you know, when you get involved in these conversations, you quickly learn that there's a lot of youth that are hurting out there. And it's alarming, actually. But if we can be that resource and that person in their life that really helps them get through their teenage years and really tells them that they're good enough and believes in them, that's a win.
That was Sterling John from Edmonton, Alberta. You're listening to the voices of our people on the Wind Speaker Radio Network. I'm Daniel Barker Tremblay. Next, I will be sitting down with Harold Horsfall from Calgary, Alberta.
My name is Harold Horsfall. I am from the Pascua First Nation. So that'd be just northeast of Regina, Treaty 4. But we're Cree Soto, but I'm born and raised here in Calgary. Mohkinsis, Wenchispa Yare, Gutsetse, and Otasquini.
And I have to ask, Harold, growing up, what was it like growing up in the Pascua First Nation?
Like I just mentioned, I grew up actually in the traditional territory of the Forest Lawn community here in Calgary. So I'm born and raised here in Calgary, and I graduated from the Plains Indians Cultural Survival School, which unfortunately is no longer there. That funding has been redistributed to the Niitsitapi and Bitoyis family schools here at the elementary and junior high level, which is sad, but, you know, because, like, I was able to do and learn a lot about my culture, drumming class, drumming 10, 20, and 30, that was awesome. And then even just at the picks, just playing in the gym, we would be playing like basketball almost every day of the week. We get chased out of there to go to class and whatnot. But it was great. And growing up here in Calgary, it was good for me. And there's a really strong Indigenous community here, and I'm glad, I'm humbled, and I'm proud to be a part of it.
And of course, you know, as you mentioned, you were surrounded by a lot of the culture growing up as a little one. Now, I have to ask now, Harold, like, what was the first thing that, like, screamed to you, like, in regards to language? Like, did any of your relatives or the school that you went to, did they teach you about the language as well?
Oh, yeah. Yes, my family did go to PICS as well. And at PICS, like, there was Cree lessons, Blackfoot lessons. I took both. There wasn't any Stoney or Tsutina, but there was Cree and Blackfoot lessons, and I took both, and it was great. Like, we had, our elders, we had Lloyd Ewanen, who was also, he was my neighbor, I think, traditionally. Like, he's from the Fort Kapal Valley as well, the river valley there, and we also had Maggie Blackkettle, the late Maggie Blackkettle, who was also one of our elders. So, yeah, it was really good. It was full of tradition and culture, language, and both Plains Indians Cultural Survival School. So it was about that. But one of the big things, that one of the main reasons I wanted to go to that school, which I was sad because in the year that I started, I think it was a year or two before they actually cut it, but there was a cultural camp where you'd go for a week and you'd hunt, and then people would skin animals, and you do all those traditional activities. And so I was all I heard about them because my brother Jeffrey went, and he was telling me about the camp, and I was all hyped up to go, and I was in grade 10, and I was like, yes, this is going to be awesome. And then I got there, and I found out that the camp was discontinued. So it was sad, but since then I've been able to find my way around, and I've learned how to hunt and skin and do all of that kind of stuff. So, you know, I guess, like to any youth, it's just always about setting that goal. You got to listen to that part that's inside you, and you know, that voice that's inside you, and you just got to really, focus on it, and just don't let go of it, and keep doing everything that you can every day. When you wake up, you should really focus on that and remember it during the day, and then before you go to sleep, to really focus on those goals, those things that you want to do with your life, as it is your life. And all, and as I was taught, all of our lives are a gift, and that we need to be thankful for that and respect that gift, and really put in our elbow grease, because that's the only thing we really can do, is to put in our elbow grease to bring those gifts to the surface.
And with that elbow grease, you were able to do and accomplish a lot of things, Harold. One of them being, you know, I've done some research on you, and I was, like, flabbergasted in a sense to see that, like, the amazing photography skills that you have. What inspired you to pick up the camera and capture beautiful moments with the camera?
Oh, well, that was, like, I've always loved looking at pictures, like, Even in school, like in junior high school, high school, and I remember, like, looking at textbook pictures actually and getting lost in those pictures. And I just always liked looking at pictures. And then 2020 rolled around, and every now and then, like, I would just mess around with the camera. I didn't really know how to use it or anything. And then 2020 came, the pandemic set in, and I was like, all right, what am I going to do now? So it just seemed that I bought a camera like 10 years earlier when I took my family out to see my brother, and he's married out on the West Coast at the Gold River area. So, and then we're going to go out to their traditional territory, their traditional summering ground, where they would do a lot of fishing, catch a lot of salmon. So I was like, oh yeah, I got to have a good camera for that. And so I went to Costco and bought a Rebel camera, a Canon Rebel. And so it was just kind of kicking around. 2020 kicked in, and we were locked up in the pandemic. So I just started watching a lot of YouTube. YouTube is a phenomenal resource, by the way. And so I was able to get a lot of ideas there on how to use the camera, how to balance, you know, your shutter speed, your ISO, and your aperture, and just the fundamentals of a camera to get the good exposure. Then I started learning about light, and then I signed up for Carl Taylor Photography. So if there's any aspiring photographers out there, I highly recommend Carl Taylor Photography, because he's a really good professional photographer. If you look him up on Instagram, he's awesome. And so there's a lot of kind of learn at your own type of pace, a lot of things. And then just the real key that I found to being a photographer, I can't call myself a good photographer. I can't. And so I just do what I do. But the key that I strive for is that, you know, like good photography is it. 80% of the 90% of the material is out there to be a good photographer, but it comes back to that elbow grease, because you know you got to work really, really hard in the beginning. You can make a lot of gains rather quickly, but then when you start getting to the, you know, it starts getting harder, and you have to put in much more. So you could put it in like 10 hours and you'll maybe make an incremental gain, but that's what it's like when you get higher up. So it's the more time you put in, you know, the quality of your work is a function of that. And that's the advice that I've had from other photographers. So I'll just relay that if anybody's wanting to get into photography.
You can't tell, but I'm actually taking notes right now because I do photography as well. So, and just to know that, like, when I saw your photos, I was just blown away. I was like, man, I can only dream of. I'm lucky to get like some really good ones, especially, you know, under the tutelage of Bert Crowfoot, who's well renowned in, you know, photography for many, many decades within the Indigenous communities across Alberta. Now, including photography, there's another hat that you've also worn in the past. Correct me if I'm wrong as well. You know, you were also a firefighter. What was your experience like being a firefighter several years ago, back in 2011?
Oh, it was great. Well, the reason that I really wanted to be a firefighter really is just because traditionally, like, that's what men were supposed to do, you know. They're, you know, and I was kind of raised, like, my brothers had four older brothers, and they're all rough and tumble types, and, like, you know, go play basketball or go play hockey at the outdoor rinks and whatnot. You know, it was always just about being rough, and so I felt like, you know, I needed that outlet, I guess you'd say. And so that's what firefighting was like. And I really enjoyed firefighting. And it was a really hard decision. I had to leave my firefighting career to be work in the Indigenous Relations Office. And that was a really, really hard decision. And I still don't know if I made the right one or not, because I really enjoyed my time as a fireman. It was really good, though. Got to see a lot of things, got a lot of really good experiences, and saw some things that are probably a little more less polite for table conversation. But it was real life, raw experience, and so I'm grateful that I had that. I'm grateful that I didn't have any injuries. But the biggest thing with firefighting these days is that most firefighter deaths are actually from the line of duty deaths are relatively fewer and far between. They still happen. It's a dangerous job, and it's an extreme job. But, you know, most of it comes from cancer. So, like, a lot of the building materials and, well, there's petrochemicals and everything. And when those burn, it gives off really thick black smoke, and you can protect your airway, but that's, you still absorb a lot of those chemicals through your skin. So I guess that would be my advice. If you see thick black smoke, get as far away from it as you can, because you will absorb it through your skin, and it does lead to a host of cancers.
Well, that's good advice to know, especially with all the fires that are currently happening right now across the province of Alberta. And I have to ask as well, you know, throughout your time when you were growing up, who were some of your mentors growing up to help shape you into the person that you are today?
Oh, yeah, that definitely. I'd have to start with my brothers. So I have John. But they're all Blondeaux, so John Blondeau, Jeffrey Blondeau, Jason Blondeau, Christian Blondeau, and then my sister Gail with Janice. They're all the J's, and I'm an H. But my sister Gail too. My family has been the best for me. They've pushed me hard, and it was my sister Gail who really pushed me hard with education. So, and she led the way. She was the first in our family to get a degree. So, yeah, so I was just following in her footsteps and trying to keep up to her. She's a clinical psychologist. She's a clinical social worker now. So she does a lot of work helping our people as well. But she is very quiet about it. You won't hear much about her, and I think she'd rather keep it that way. But I went and rocked the boat, so.
And she's one of the unsung heroes. And now, of course, with you wanting to pursue the post-secondary, of course, and, you know, with pursuing your the things that you've accomplished within education-wise, you I have to ask, when you thought to yourself in that moment, okay, this is what I'm going to do, or what am I going to do? And one of them being is that you pursue the Bachelor of Arts in Economics program at the University of Calgary. Who or what inspired you to get into that program within the UFC?
Oh, I started in philosophy because, at first I started in general studies, and actually ran into her the other night, Shauna Cunningham. She used to be at Mount Royal College, so I'm dating myself and her. But, you know, through the Aboriginal Education Project there, and Mount Royal University now has a great reputation and a great following. And actually, when we were engaging for the Indian Residential School Memorial, they were the most active and engaged group, and it was really awesome. And it was good to go back because that culture is still there. At Mount Royal, it was really good. And so I was taking all these general courses, and then I really liked philosophy because, you know, like coming from Indigenous culture, it's much more spiritual, it's more deep. And I found that philosophy out of all the classes was good. And I thought, well, you know what? I want to be a lawyer. And so I heard that philosophy is one of those degrees that was really good preparation. And then what happened for the economics, I took an economics option. Well, I was, you know, you have to take a number of different options. And I liked, I took economics 201, and I really liked it. I enjoyed it. I thought, you know what, this isn't bad. I even went on, I took economics 203. And then I was like, a little later in life, I was almost done the philosophy degree, actually. And then I was like, well, what if I don't get into law school? What kind of a job am I going to get with a philosophy degree? So that's why I switched to economics, because of all of the options I took, I was like, well, you know, that could lead to something. And you know, and at the time, too, a lot of my colleagues were taking degrees in social work and Indigenous colleagues. And I thought, well, you know what, there's a lot of people going in that route, and you know, I should probably diversify myself, and I'm not a social worker. I'm not a social worker type. You know, my heart's off, my hat off to them, and I work with many social workers, and it's a great discipline. But for me, I was like, well, you know, I'll try something else. So that's what I did, and kind of it's good because it really led me, because I've now partnered also with our procurement team at the City of Calgary, and we're working on an Indigenous procurement program. So there's lots of benefits, and again, that's like any youth, right? You never know. Again, you always have to listen to your own internal sense, you know, and you gotta put in a lot of good elbow grease, and definitely if you can talk to elders and people in the community that you trust and respect, and you know, form your own and listen to yourself and know that at some point later in life, you know, whatever you do, there's probably a reason and it'll pay off.
That was Harold Horsfall from Calgary, Alberta on Voices of Our People. I'd like to thank today's special guests for joining us, Sterling John and Harold Horsfall. Tune in next Thursday for more Voices of Our People on the Windspeaker Radio Network.